I mean, I think I'm more of a Carrie than a Miranda. I don't know if...
I've always thought that way about you, too.
Right? I
see. But you have like a little bit... You have some Samantha in you, too, if I'm being honest.
Don't you fucking say that to me.
Just the way you... Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Episode 313, Dear Emily and Richard.
Or is it Dear Richard and Emily?
Is it?
I don't recall.
I think it's the
You're right, I am wrong.
I'm pregnant.
Oh shoot. Welcome to Gilmore Guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Demi.
And we are the Gilmore Guys.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, dang. Dear Richard and Emily. Emily and Richard. It is Emily and Richard. Why do I always think Richard and Emily?
It's interchangeable. They're both there.
They're both there. Guys, thank you for joining us for another week on Gilmore Guys. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the world, politically.
ISIS.
ISIS is like a thing
that
now.
That dang plane. Where is it?
Yeah, Malaysia Air. Robert Dirtz, Fred Dirtz, all that jazz. Before we get to all that and all of our classic political discussion on the show, we want to give a big stars holla.
Holla, holla.
Out to Carissa again. You guys know Carissa at Warren White on Twitter. And she once more provided such a lovely little package of goodies for us with this note enclosed, this amazing postcard. Greetings from Texas, where she's based and where we're both from.
Howdy.
Howdy. Yep, that's what we all say there. We all have that's accents. True. We all ride on our cows everywhere. Not our horses, our cows.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Demi and Kevin, couldn't send Bluebell ice cream in the mail, but here's a few home state pride items. Really wanted to send name stamp license plate keychains, but once you know it, they don't make a Demi or Carissa. Oh, shooties. Enjoy the stuff. Thanks for making bad days good. Love, Carissa. And then she also said, P.S., you don't have to take a pic with this one, but we're going to disrespect her wishes and do it anyway. So she sent us another beautiful cross stitch that is, it says, where you tweet, I will follow, with a silhouette. Well, really, the logo of Twitter, the Twitter bird. Does that bird have a name?
Twitter man.
Oh, yeah. Like the... Like the Pearl Jam song.
Is there a song called Twitter Man?
Yeah, it goes, can't find a Twitter Man.
141 characters.
So, stars holla to Carissa for that. She also gave us state flags of Texas that I think might double as bandanas. So, thank you so much, so much to her. Big stars holla out to her. Also, something we haven't discussed on the show, but we got these a few weeks ago. A friend of mine, actually, who's also a listener and a gilly, her name is Lydia, and she made us Pop-Tarts. She made these little, she sewed these Pop-Tarts, made them from scratch. It looks like they're not edible. They're cloth, they're fabric. But they're cute little Pop-Tarts with faces on it in tribute to the Gilmore Girls' favorite go-to snack. That was not product placement, according to Helen Pye, and I believe her. Don't you believe her?
I believe her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll give her the benefit
of the doubt.
Seems
like maybe someone on the writing staff owns some stock in Pop-Tarts.
Oh, you think that was the case? Is like
maybe.
John Stevens was in there like, yeah, throw in a Pop-Tarts, ref.
You know what kids love nowadays? Pop-Tarts.
John, stop saying that. Well, let's get into the episode discussion. This is episode 313, Dear Emily and Richard. Which the title, of course, comes from the note that Christopher wants to write Lorelai's parents. He's like, come on, let's go away. Let's just write a letter. Dear Emily and Richard. Which it's helpful that he would lay out that that header.
It was also helpful when she said, it's me, Lorelai, when they came in.
Gilmore.
In the first flashback.
Yep. The Netflix synopsis for this one is when Christopher's pregnant girlfriend goes into labor and asks Rory to stay with her at the hospital, Lorelai reminisces about the day Rory was born. Although, that's not really what happened.
Not really.
The first half happened. It's not when that happened. Lorelai reminisced. Really, she just started reminiscing.
Is she even reminiscing? Like, she never goes into that, mode.
That was an interesting thing, actually. That's a good point, because the flashbacks are not really motivated by anything.
They're not set up in the world of someone's thinking about this. It's just, this is happening.
Right, because
you just see this.
Yeah, the thing that triggers it, or does it trigger it, it's just the scene before we see these flashbacks is when they get all the travel books, the Paris and Nikki Hilton travel books from Emily, the big shipment of them, and then it goes into the flashback. So it's really unmotivated, and I wonder if that's on purpose or not. But before we get into all that discussion, let's do a little segment we do every episode called Pop
Goes the Culture,
where we take every pop culture reference, or just reference, doesn't have to be pop, doesn't even have to be culture. We just take every word in the show and put it in a supercut and see what we can make of it. So this is episode 313, Dear Emily and Richard, Pop Goes the Culture.
If you're Adrian's med, that includes everything that ever happens in your whole career.
So let's leave the Barney's clearance sale reenactment for another day.
I just need to go on record that a grown man should not throw himself a beanie baby retirement party.
There wasn't one other picture that was good for the group and didn't have me looking like I'm in Cirque du Soleil.
In your Easter bonnet.
You could ruin our television set.
All the frills upon it. You'll be the grandest fella in the Easter parade.
Hey, does she know Don Ho?
No.
Charles?
No.
The CNH Pure Cane Sugar Dancers?
Lorelai.
I wonder if Laura Mercier makes Demerol.
Can I bite you? Pull your hair or use the epilady on you, because I really need to do something.
What are we doing?
That's about the whale.
Yes.
Singing in the Rain, Funny Girl, Easter Parade, and American in Paris, and as an added bonus, the new classic dance series, Urban Cowboy, Saturday Night Fever, Grease, Footloose, and Flashdance.
Oh no, it's raining in Spain, but since the rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain,
looks like Italy for us.
Mamma mia.
These are Paris and Nikki Hilton's kind of travel books.
And the Tibet with the Richard Gere pictures everywhere.
I died, maybe you Sarah Moulton.
Maureen told me that Howard Stern said that if you squat, it makes the baby come out faster.
I don't watch that much television. I don't find forensic work quite as fascinating as the rest of the world.
Burn on CSI.
I was like, that's a good, like, that's good.
It was nice, yeah, right?
It was a sick burn.
Very succinct, but like, so, yeah.
You could feel that coming from, like, one of the Paladins. It's just like, all these forensic shows. Like, let's just throw this in there.
Although it's funny, and we haven't talked about this, but I believe in the beginning, and maybe this is something we should have mentioned on our Best of Friends podcast appearance as well. Shout out Stars Hollow to them. Go check that out. We were on their season finale podcast with also friend of the show, Allie Gertz, and Krista Doyle, Jamie Woodham, Aaron Mallory Long. But Gilmore Girls, when it was first on, was positioned against Friends.
Was it?
It was on the same night. So, and a lot of, like, Lauren Graham, even in interviews, has attributed that to part of the success of the show, because they set them up to, like, against the big, mega, giant, mega hit.
Yeah.
So expectations were like ground floor low. If you did anything, you were doing all right. So in a way, them doing okay numbers against the big monster hit kind of helped them like sustain the life of the show.
Yeah.
Because the expectations were so, so much lower. But yeah, Emily's not into CSI, Law and Order. Neither am I. Even though Emily was on the Law and Order Special Victims Unit and the regular Law and Order. This one was written by Miss Amy Sherman Palladino herself and directed by Gail Mancuso. So definitely has the stamp and the mark of an Amy episode.
For sure.
Especially in the interactions between Lorelai and Emily, I think, which of course were some of my favorite scenes in the episode.
The present day interactions with Lorelai and Emily are really... like, they're pleasant. They're nice. In these two episodes, in 313 and 314, Emily is really nice, and she doesn't, like, stir up a fuss about anything. And it's just...
Well, she does a little bit at the end of 314.
Right.
But for the most part, she's got a lot
of
chill.
She's, like, trying so hard to, like, make things work. And seeing that and that dynamic of her just being, like, friends almost with Lorelai is really nice to see. And it made this episode way more, it feel more important to me when we see it set against the backdrop of stuff that happened to her as a kid.
I know the juxtaposition of that, especially at the end, which we'll get to, of course, was really effective, because it wasn't even the point. There wasn't even a point that they were hammering home, other than like over the passage of time, this is where the relationship between these two women has gone.
Right.
This is where it started. This is the baggage that they both carry. And the present day, Laura, all the business with Lorelai trying to get Emily a DVD player and do something nice for her mom and like try to like understand her world. What do you do? What do you do when, Richard's not home and, and you're done organizing stuff? It was just so effective and so touching, and I really, really enjoyed watching it. Of course, if we're going to the Twitter Q&A.
Twitter Q&A.
The question we got, and how many times does Kevin Porter cry in this episode? Jessica Frey writes, how much did you cry, Kevin? Terry Kapp writes, real talk, how many times did Kevin tear up? Guys, yeah, I cried. No big deal. But I didn't cry as much as you guys probably thought I did. I only cried at the end. All the stuff leading up to it, I was not shedding tears. I was, you know, I found it to be moving and emotional, but not until Emily finds the note at the end.
That was the closest I've ever come to crying.
Yeah? Oh, just, dang.
Okay, so them walking in, seeing, the stroller is moved, and things are, like, moved around the house.
Right.
I was like, I don't understand what's happening. They go to find the note, and just the look on Emily's face and, like, the trembling of her lip, and then realizing that that's, like, knowing that the letter says she's gone is, like, just heartbreaking to see Emily's reaction to that.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's one of those interesting things. I think on other shows, they would punch in for a close-up shot, and they don't. They play it all in the master shot. They never, like, push in. And they play that scene dry, too. There's no music over it. Right. There's nothing, like, until the very end where they, like, zoom in into the portrait at the end. There's nothing cueing you up like, guys, this is heavy. This is emotional, you know?
I liked seeing the portrait, but it felt like The Shining, where they're just like looking
a little
at the painting.
Bit.
There's got something you got to know.
I wasn't super into the portrait at the end, but I did love that juxtaposition. So going to another Twitter Q&A.
I sang it already.
Oh, you did? Oh, sorry. I fell asleep during that point.
You said another.
Poop Doctor.
Poop Doc.
Our old friend. Isn't it odd how the show doesn't quite address how Rory feels about the new baby, other than not wanting to be there?
Has she addressed it in a previous episode?
No.
Oh.
I mean, well, I guess the only interaction they would have had up to that point was at Sherry's nightmare baby shower from hell in whatever episode that was, 306?
Well, yeah. Well, really, the only way it affects her is by possibly being her new, like, sister, stepsister, which I don't think she cares about.
Right.
So part of me is just like, she would be like, that's so great, cool, but not like, I'm mad or I'm happy in any
Yeah, there's not way. A lot of investment there that I think she needs to show, because it's not going to affect her life, I think. Well, certainly it's not going to affect her life as much as Sherry thinks it will. But yeah, overall, I think them not addressing all the ways Rory would or wouldn't be affected by it, I think it's true to the thing that she's just kind of thrown into it.
What? Yeah, I was going to say, she is having the worst day of her life.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of George Michael in Arrested Development, where he's just at the... It's like a different kind of thing, but it's like he's like just sees death and like decay everywhere. Or anytime he has to go to the prison, it's like a really uncomfortable situation, because Rory's just like... No, I don't want to.
She gets screwed
awful.
Out of the school portrait. She's the only one there when the baby happens. And then she becomes her assistant, essentially. And then she's essentially has to help with the delivery. Like, I would just imagine being in her situation. It's like, this is the worst thing that could have happened.
She's having a bad day.
Yeah.
It's not a good day for Rory. This is the first episode where I'm like, Sherry, no, I don't like you right now.
Part of me thinks I was sympathetic to her because of the, like, baby crazy, but I also just, I don't know. I don't know if I didn't like Sherry. I didn't like her friend Maureen.
Oh, Skylar White?
Yes, exactly. That was what I was going to say. She reminded me of Anna Gunn. Yeah. She was stressing me out. Just her fast.
Big time.
Her fast talking was, like, different in a way. It was just very much like, I'm trying to sell you a boat or something. I was just like, I don't want to be around you right now.
She kept saying, Sherry screwed up. Sherry screwed up. Yeah. Sherry screwed up. And too many times to the point, I could not tune in to like caring what she was saying at all. And she was not a fun person to watch.
Yeah. Although it was funny to me when Sherry goes, Maureen told me on Howard Stern, if you sit upright, the baby comes out faster. Like, she wouldn't know that was a joke.
Yeah. Wait, that's not a joke, dude.
Oh, Kevin.
Oh, no. I got a phone call to make.
To your pregnant wife.
That's my pregnant wife. Now, a note I found about this episode, and I have not double-checked to see if it's true, because that would require me doing work
right.
for this dumb podcast I don't care about.
Never.
Never. But the note is the actress that they used to play young Lorelai has brown eyes during the flashback. However, it's been established that Lorelai has blue eyes.
Of course.
In some, but not all, shots from the DVD version, most notably the shots with her and Christopher on the stairs during their parents arguing, the eyes have been colorized to blue.
See, I noticed that halfway through. I was like, wait, she has brown eyes. And then I looked up pictures of the actress, Chelsea Brummett. Mm-hmm. She has brown eyes. And yeah. then I was like, oh, did they give her contacts? Because I noticed she was wearing blue eyes. And that's so weird. Why would they even care in the DVD versions? Like,
yeah. So was it... Because I didn't go back and watch it again after reading that on that note. But on Netflix, were the eyes colorized yeah. as well? Okay. So
that's so weird.
Hmm.
And unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, or at that point, just get contacts or something. Was it really distracting looking?
It wasn't
you?
Distracting. It was very subtle. It was this so subtle that I could see them being colorized more than them being contacts. Because mm-hmm. I feel like if they did it like any brighter, it'd be like, oh, those are weird fake eyes.
Right. So, speaking of Chelsea Brummett, the mm-hmm. actress who plays young Lorelai, let's talk about...
All that.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was a regular on All That. Yeah. That's right.
No, but...
So, let's talk about All That. This is Chelsea Brummett, and Philip Van Dyke is the gentleman who plays young Christopher. Now, anytime you do this on a TV show, because obviously this has been done before, kind of like... look back at the past, and then whoever is like the titular star of the show, they don't get them to play the younger version of themselves.
Of course.
Even though they did with Kelly Bishop, which I think worked.
Yeah.
For the most part, although some of the makeup was pretty crazy. Maybe it's just a high
depth. The hair is what I was like,
the
come
bangs
on.
Were bad, but like you could see like some weird caking of makeup on during the scene where they're about to take the portrait for the coming out ball. Yeah, I think so. But overall, it is such a big gamble because you've established who this character is with a really one-of-a-kind performance from Lauren Graham, and same thing with Christopher, with David Sutcliffe. And other shows have done it to mixed results. For this, do you think that it was worth it? Do you think it was worth the casting of these young actors to play these iconic roles, well, iconic especially in the case of Lorelai, to tell this story?
So I think it was important to tell the story. I just think that setting it against the backdrop of Sherry's pregnancy made it weaker for me because I didn't care about Sherry's pregnancy. If they'd set it across the backdrop of Emily and Richard arguing about something related to Lorelai's past, because they always do that thing of like saying, you ruined any chance you had at being whatever. If they'd set it against the backdrop of that drama rather than Sherry's drama, I would have cared a bit more because it's like, if it were resolved at the end, it'd be like, oh, this story ended sadly, but they're all right now. I still think it was important to see. I think I don't regret seeing it. I loved seeing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the casting... Actually, the casting for Lorelai was great in the sense that they got an actress that can mimic Lorelai's like affectations and manner of talking.
I thought she did pretty good.
She was great.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if they specifically went for a comedian thinking, oh, they can probably talk faster and that, or like mimic the mm-hmm. speech patterns more than a dramatic actor could. And the casting of Christopher was good, if only because it kind of looked like Christopher. But aside from that, I didn't think anything particular about that.
He seemed to be like such a... Because in all we've heard about him, it sounded like he was kind of a Jess when he was in high school.
Yeah.
But he was kind of nerdy. He was kind of like a little, not gawky, but he was like a nerdy
dude. The craziest thing he does is like, we should drink some alcohol, yeah?
Ooh, yeah, baby. Like, and at first I was like, man, he looks a lot geekier overall than current day Christopher.
Yeah.
But then when Christopher came into the hospital... near the end of the episode, because he's MIA yeah. for some reason. I did see the resemblance there, and I think overall the casting was probably as good as it could go. It's just such a gamble. Like, I remember on, I think in American Horror Story Season 3, they cast an actress as the young version of Jessica Lange's character, and that was a mistake.
Oh, really?
It was so bad. Just, I mean, because Jessica Lange, again, it's yeah. like one in a million. and to like have a young person try to do it, it just never, yeah, and it never goes maybe exactly the way they wanted to. I think it worked here. I didn't think it was bad because this does get a rap for like, oh, these young actors suck, blah, blah, blah. I don't think they were bad. I just think it's always a little bit tenuous. You know, I think the best I've ever seen it is on The West Wing, season 2 finale. Have you seen all The West Wing?
No.
Okay. So in the season 2 finale of The West Wing, they do cast a young version of Jed Bartlett, of Martin Sheen's character,
yeah,
and Mrs. Landingham, Catherine Justine's character. And those were great castings, both of them, but it was so far back. It was like 50 years prior to the current episode that I think that's what made it work. And the fact that this was like 16, 17, 18 right. years ago made it a little more tough to pull off. But I think they did it overall, and it was worth it. And those scenes did flesh out the story in a way where it didn't just feel like frills. It didn't just feel like, oh, like fanfic, basically. It felt really grounded and vital to the story. The show opens with Emily and Richard laughing and scoffing at the idea of Lorelai and Rory going backpacking across Europe, which is weird when you consider in episode 103, Kill Me Now, I believe, Richard's like, yeah, it'll be cool for you to backpack. Like, Rory's telling him about it.
Really?
Yeah. So I didn't realize. I don't know if it's like a weird, like, if it's just continuity, if it's just like, well, if Emily's laughing at this, I'm going to laugh at it too. Or if he's just, yeah, or if he just forgot and he was kind of checked out when Rory was telling him about it.
He was definitely checked out in this episode until Rory showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
He's checked out in a lot of this episode. I was noticing when they were, when in the flashback, when they're walking around the hospital, Emily's losing her mind. He's just kind of like, Emily, it's so crowded in here.
My feet hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was more concerned about his feet.
My daughter's going into pregnancy, whatever.
Yeah. Although I got real sad in that scene with the Gilmores and then Straub and whatever the hell that lady's name is. Straub
Francine.
Straub and Francine. Yeah. Abortions tossed around as an option, but kind of with how conservative the Gilmores probably are, that's not really an option.
Of course.
And it was so sad the way, and Edward Herman played it so well, as best as he could, in the young man makeup, you know, where it's like his hair is black and there were less wrinkles, but he pretty much just looked like himself.
He looked like young James Bond.
A little bit, yeah.
Or like young Richard looks like James Bond.
Mm-hmm. And I also like in that scene too, that Christopher and Lorelai are on the steps posing like they're in a music video for Flashdance.
Yeah.
Like the way they're sitting with their legs, yeah.
Or in like a Nirvana video when it's like, these kids have been abused, you can tell.
Totally. But the way he stands up, he's like,
they will get married. They will live here. And Christopher will go to work at my company. That is the solution. Now we have a plan so we can all stop talking about it. Please excuse me, I have work to do.
Just so quiet and dignified. And he's probably the saddest person out of all of them.
Easily.
Yeah. Like more so than Emily or freaking Straub and Francine. Overall, even flashbacks aside, I thought there was a lot to like in this episode. We got some real good Miss Patty action at the beginning.
Miss Patty is literally a sexual predator. Not in the sense that she's going after like little children, but she's literally a predator of sexual experiences. She's lying in wait, just waiting for people to walk by.
Or then there's that line.
I've been told.
I love when she says, Dean, you get any taller and you'll have to climb you, like, or I'll have to get some mountain gear to climb you or something like
Good
that.
Grief. Love it so much. I also like, because this is pretty much the most kind of Jess Dean action in this episode, is that first scene. So Dean's working construction. He's working for Tom now.
You're a good kid, Dean. You hardly bug me at all.
Yeah, that was a great line. Love it. And by the way, Patty's wearing that tunic. Lord knows what's going on underneath it.
What do you mean?
Well, she's just sitting there like you don't see her arms.
Oh.
Just saying.
Okay.
And so Dean's working construction. Jess is working at Luke's. And at this point, it was like the idea occurred to me, Jess looks like Bruce Springsteen, and Dean is now a character in a Bruce Springsteen song. He's working construction in the small town. And they're weird, like, dance that they do, the weird conflict that they have. Dean just needs to order lunch for a bunch of people.
I loved this conflict because it made Jess look like an idiot and made Dean look really good.
Do you think it made Dean look really good?
I think so. Because he was like, it's the first time. I wrote down, like, Dean's so funny and charismatic in the scene. I like him in this scene.
Right.
Like, just this scene, though. Because he, like, his jokes are great. He's just, he's literally not trying to start a fight. He just wants to order lunch.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, doing his job. I don't
when
know.
When he reads it real slowly and, yeah. Well, it was just a weird thing, too, because Jess was like, oh, you're Taylor's errand boy now. And it's like, what? His, that probably pays a lot better than working at Luke's.
Yeah.
I would say.
He literally has to work two jobs.
Yeah. Like, he's probably making a little bank.
But, I mean, Dean isn't trying to start a fight or anything. He's just like, yeah. Just
give me my lunch.
Just give me the lunch, dude.
Yeah, and Jess balks at the idea of, like, oh, wow, there's so many lunches to get. As
there
if,
are
like,
six burgers.
Yeah, and, like, bulk ordering isn't a thing. Like, it's never happened before in Stars
Maybe
Hollow
in
history.
Maybe in the 1 month that Jess has worked there.
Probably. But so dime, and it was just one of those things where it's like there's not a lot of like status or power like to exchange here. Like, you're a waiter, you're a construction worker, just keep it going.
He also gets very frustrated easily where he's like, pickles on the sides, like, on what though? On the side of the road where I'm gonna dump your body, I'll kill you. It's like, whoa, calm down.
Maybe he needs to chill a little bit. I think the only Suki action we get in these two episodes, unless I'm mistaken,
is her flipping the cake.
Her flipping that golf cake into the trash. Which
By the
was,
way, good flip.
It was a great flip.
And it was shot in one take from the previous.
Yeah, this, it was a long one.
Yeah, this scene was shot, or this entire episode was shot really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, there's some nice, like, pretty seamless transitions at the end where switching between, like, Sherry's new baby in the hospital, Georgia, and then Rory in the hospital and with Christopher and Lorelai looking on.
Right.
You know what it reminds me of too? I don't know if anyone remembers this, but Catch Me If You Can. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Yeah.
The George Clooney, his first movie he directed, which didn't get a lot of love. It got okay buzz, but like there were certain things in it that were so impressive. It was like, you know, Clooney was like a first-time director, kid in a candy store. And there were these things he would do to like to show the passage of time. He would do transitions in camera.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like a cross-dissolve to a different thing. So he'd have like Sam Rockwell at this position at the company he's working at, then this position and this position in the same shot. So he'd like run off, do a costume change. Very theatrical.
There's one shot they have where I think it's Sam Rockwell sitting in a room and they like slowly like move in towards his face, and then when they move out he's in a different room sitting in the same position, and it's all in camera. They just had a rotating set that like put him in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy, but yeah, that movie's good.
It's a cool it's really good. It's a cool theatrical choice. And the scene where Lorelai, we just talked about this scene, but with the parents like fighting about what they're gonna do, where Lorelai goes into the kitchen after Emily, and then Emily walks out, and that was like obviously done in camera,
right,
and all that stuff. That's what that reminded me of. Don't you think young Lorelai kind of looked like Jennifer Morrison of House and Once Upon a Time?
I could see that. I was thinking Charlie XCX.
Charlie
XCX. She's a pop star.
Oh, I don't know this person.
I think Bruce Springsteen, but a lady.
Oh, okay, I got it. Rory and Paris are still at odds. We talked about the yearbook photo before where she's sneezing in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And that's the one Paris is using. This is frustrating to me because it's like, it's kind of like the way Luke and Lorelai are frustrating, where it's like, there's nothing between them. There's nothing really holding them back,
right,
except for Alex, which is, oh, by Gilmore Goof. In the previous episode, I was like, yeah, I don't think he comes back, but he's so forgettable. I forgot that he comes back in 314. Old Sheriff Twilight. But that there's no obstacles between them. There's no reason for them not to be together. So it goes, I find when there's such, this is just a convention of storytelling and sitcoms in general, but when the obstacles between people are so flimsy, I find it equally as tiring. Yeah. Like with Paris and Rory, Paris is obviously like real passive aggressive and pissed at Rory because of the stuff with Jamie and all of Francie's machinations from the episode or two ago, and then the confrontation. Like, it's just like, just get, be better. You know, I don't want to watch you guys struggle to be friends. The desaturated colors in the flashbacks, I felt like were weirdly done.
They were distracting.
I felt like it was too much. It should have been like a more subtle shade. Or, I mean, truthfully, I think there's a way to do flashbacks where it's not so desaturated. Because it went almost like 10 degrees too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was so flat and pale looking.
I get they had to do it because they don't want to do like an overlay that's like, this is 16 years earlier or something. But maybe if it were just like...
I would have preferred that to those colors, though.
I think so, too.
You know? Lorelai barges in to Luke's doing that emotional dump and just going on, blah, 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 blah. Luke's not there. And then Kirk just turns around and goes, I was listening.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Kirk is in the diner in every single scene that they're in the diner this episode, which is weird. But
it's not weird when you consider he can't go home. He doesn't want to.
That's true. He's got his mom. Very abusive.
He's got Cat Kirk.
He's got Mommy Dearest and fucking gremlins at home.
Yeah.
One funny thing that I thought is in the scene where Nicole and Luke come back and Jess is like, I'm going to leave for about an hour. If he did leave, Kirk is still there.
Oh, that's true. And who's going to run it unless Caesar's there?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's 11:30. My thought was, does Luke not close at 11:30 or so? Because they opened pretty early.
Wait, was it 11:30 at that point in the
show? Yeah, because he's like, hey, it's 11:30. Where are you going?
Yeah. Wow, that's a long time for a small town diner to be open.
It's the only place that serves coffee in the entire town.
That's why it's so damn popular.
Yeah.
And then that scene that you're talking about where it was kind of sweet. Actually, we'll get to it later. But for now, I want to talk about when Luke comes down because Lorelai was looking for him. And what is he wearing, dude?
Leather jacket.
Leather jacket. Well, let's get into the fashion report.
Fashion.
He's wearing that leather jacket and he's wearing the sweater that Lorelai got him 2 seasons ago at this point, because that's when they went shopping for Rachel, for clothes for him to wear with Rachel.
It's just his lady date shirt.
His lady sweater. Date shirt. No baseball cap. This is the...
Shaven face.
Shaved face. That was the other... Oh, I didn't notice that. He did have a shaved face.
I was trying to figure out who he looked like.
Yeah, so I say no to the leather jacket. Dean has a turtleneck, so that's interesting.
Dean does have a turtleneck, and it made me think, oh, he's trying to be more mature, but he's also in a construction zone, so it's unnecessary.
Yeah, turtlenecks while doing construction is an interesting choice.
I was just going to say, Jess's shirt is so shiny in the first scene at the diner where he's arguing with Dean.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's like a silk shirt. It's like he's going out for a night on the town or something. It's so weird. And then later on when he's like, I'm going to go out for an hour, it's like the same shirt, but it's denim now. Like he owns the same shirt in shiny and denim versions.
Wait, was he wearing a jean jacket in that scene or is it just a denim shirt?
I thought it was just a denim shirt.
Okay. We talked about how Maureen, Sherry's awful friend, looks like Skyler.
Yeah.
From Breaking Bad. I'd say from Breaking Bad season 4 specifically, because that's what her wardrobe reminds me of too.
The car wash.
The car wash, yeah. It's like the black blazer and the white blouse. It looked just like her. Lorelai's blue turtleneck. A lot of turtlenecks in this one. Emily in the flashbacks is just no bueno with the hair. But then
single time a show in the 2000s era does a flashback that's like just a few years before, they will do that style of hair and that sort of dress that she wore near the end with the puffs.
Oh, it was hideous, yeah. Right?
Because Friends did the exact same thing with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
That same hair. And I was just, and then it was like Saved by the Bell. That, I mean, that's just their hair in that time. But like, I don't think it was the hair of, I don't know. It just
that
seemed.
Hera?
Yeah. Of that hera. I don't know. It just seemed, it seems very untimely.
Yeah, and it just, you know what it seems like to me? It seems like chronological snobbery, because it's like, this is how they wore their hair back then, you know,
yeah,
before they knew any better. And now that we're in the 2000s, this is how we, you know,
just
it's like
just make
very,
it look bad so you can tell it was the past.
Yeah, oh, the 80s, right? Women, right? And then I also thought her flashback outfits kind of looked like Mrs. Garrett.
Who's?
Emily's from Facts of Life.
Oh, yeah. They're that orange creamsicle colored dress that she has.
Girls, girls, girls. Stars Holiday to Facts of Life. One of my favorite shows growing up.
Duty.
Duty. You take the good.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you
have. What was the version you sang before on this show? That was
you take
so good.
The good, you take the bad, you take the good, you take the bad, the bad facts.
The facts are bad. The facts are bad, baby. Well, if you're George W. Bush, they are. You misled us into a war against an enemy we didn't even have in 2004.
There's a world you gotta give. When you finally need women to live,
and suddenly you're getting that, you found out that they're all about you.
All about you.
All about you.
All about you.
It takes a lot to... You know who wrote that song?
Which song? Facts of Life or the Too Many Cooks?
No.
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life.
Who?
Mr. Alan Thicke.
Of course he did.
Son, father of Mr. Robin.
Father of Robin.
Father of Robin. Father of the Robin is my favorite.
Proud father, I'm sure.
Gosh, no.
No.
Ugh. Although I disagree with the blurred lines thing, by the way.
What thing?
The ruling.
I
think it's really dumb.
I think everyone's just kind of like, oh, really?
Yeah, chill out.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you got them. Blurred lines. The blurred lines.
Any other?
Everybody get up.
Everybody get up.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Any other fashion items?
The photographer at the fucking shoot for when she's a kid.
Uh-huh.
He looks like Robert Smith from The Cure is going on safari. He's got like this weird like emo like Tears for Fears haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also just like wearing the Brian Fellows jacket. I was just like, what's happening? I feel like photographers in the 90s were always like, I gotta dress for anything. I don't know. That was weird. Mm-hmm. Sherry's dyed hair looks nice. I like it.
I did not like
really?
It. Yeah, I wasn't into
she
it.
She looks like Winona Ryder to me.
Oh, she kind of does.
I'm about it.
What's she doing now, Miss Ryder?
Oh, I was like Winona Ryder.
No, I mean she's this afternoon. Let's hang out with her.
I'll text her.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's been the fashion report.
Wait, no, it hasn't.
Ooh, no, it hasn't. Def Jam this one. Def Jam this next one.
Oh, I don't have a Def Jam thing for this one. I was just going to say I like her gingham coat.
You should.
Lorelei's.
Oh, Oppa Gingham Coat.
Oppa Gingham Coat. Hey, pretty coat lady. Sorry.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Are you done now?
Yeah, I'm fucking done.
That's been the fashion report.
Fashion.
That felt better.
Yeah.
Than it has. So Sherry, we mentioned Sherry. She's losing her mind. She's having a baby. And yeah, there are the pregnancy crazies that do factor into that. But man, it was a toughie overall to watch. Like, she's just not fun to watch in this. And that she's of conscious mind enough to draft Roy as her personal assistant and all this stuff.
Which is kind of rude also, I feel like.
It's very rude. Yeah. It's such a boundary, like disrespect for boundaries. Yeah. Totally. 120%.
Also, nothing she has done so far suggests that she is like, I gotta stay working at all times. I didn't even know what job she had until this episode. I still kind of don't.
Oh, they talked about it before when they came to town, when she came for like Rory's debate thing.
But she wasn't like, I gotta do business all the time, you know?
Yeah, was... she wasn't Mrs. Bluetooth in her ear.
Yeah,
I don't know. Oh, we get another speaking role for a black person in this one, the nurse.
Yay.
Yeah.
So there's one. Sally.
I don't know if I don't think I have a
You know
tally
who's not
anymore.
Black is Michelle.
Michelle's not black.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's...
So we've settled on that. Anywho.
Gosh.
I do love his line. What happens when you retire? You die. Let's let's give him a coffin.
Yeah, the I thought the in business was like paid just enough attention to, other than we didn't get enough Suki.
Yeah.
In this episode. But I guess it's
always feel, I mean, I know it's because she wasn't as big as she is now then, but it always seems crazy to me when we get one scene with Melissa McCarthy, because I'm like, that must have been expensive.
Oh, but, yeah, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a lot less than...
It's like if ER had George Clooney walk by a scene, I'd be like, what? That's $1 million.
That's so funny.
There's a lot of funny physical comedy happening when Nicole is at the diner and she picks up her phone.
Oh, I loved that. Yeah. I love that so, so much.
I liked it too.
Luke and Lorelai have a... and it's something I wish they would kind of play, a shade I wish they would play a little more on the show, kind of like a sibling thing.
Yeah.
Like Lorelai's his annoying little sister, and she is like trying to pull a funny. He's like, come on, Lorelai.
Yeah. You know?
Like with him, like all the physical business I thought was very funny.
Why does he say she's a lawyer just before she picks up her phone? Is it like to preempt her picking up her phone, or?
I think it's to justify to Lorelai. To lawyer lie. That, oh, you know, she needs to use her phone in here because she's a lawyer and law is right. Important, blah, blah, blah. I would imagine that's the case. But otherwise, do we like Nicole at this point? There's not a lot to go on.
I like her.
She's pleasant enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's fine. Who knows if she comes back? I do. Sorry. I got it.
So it seems like she comes back.
Maybe. Maybe, baby.
The end. With them, okay, with Chris showing up and talking about how great it is to see, like, to be in the delivery room for a birth, I feel like it was parallel to the scene of Sherry being like, wow, Chris is just a great lover. I just love him so much. Thank you for whatever you did. It's like, you realize that you're talking about how great the person that abandoned Lorelai is. And Chris is just like, oh man, it's so great to see the miracle of birth. And it's like, yeah, if only you were there when I did it, you know?
Yeah, it was such a weird... That was what I didn't like, because the last episode that Christopher was in ended in conflict, yeah. Right? We're talking about when he storms over to Emily's place. I call it Emily's place. Yeah, he's on the stairs, and then he drives away on his little motorcycle, and Lorelai says, give it time. And now there's no conflict between them, obviously, because, like, bigger things are happening. There's bigger fish to fry.
Right.
But there's no conflict between them, and there's a weird ignorance on his part and a weird lack of sensitivity. He's like, oh, come see the baby. Come see the thing that's dividing our life.
Right.
Like, zero. And I just wonder if it's a thing on his part, like, I just want this to be okay. So if I act as if it is, then it'll make it okay. But it just, yeah, it just read tone deaf on his part.
It really was.
For the most part. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the loveliness of Emily and Lorelai trying to connect in that one scene, which yielded one of my favorite lines of the episode.
I'm not an invalid, Lorelai.
Well, of course you are, Mother. Why else would I suggest a DVD player?
And just all that stuff. And it was funny, too, when she does buy her the DVD player and come over with that stuff. In 2002, especially with all the movies she got, that's like $500.
It is.
Or around. I
the
bet
DVD
like,
player alone probably cost a pretty penny.
That was probably like $300. I did have that exact DVD player.
Really?
That she brought. Yeah, that's why I felt so connected to the show because of that. Yeah. And
I cannot believe. Like, I was just, part of me was going crazy when they were talking about hiring a professional to set up a DVD player or even reading the manual
to
hook it
up. It's two cords.
It's two cords. Go behind the TV and see what looks like it fits.
It's color coordinated, too. It's not a... awesome mind puzzle. But that's when they're having dinner, where Lorelai gets the call and Rory's like, oh, I'm in the hospital. I've seen too many butts today. Yeah. And then she leaves, and the bummer about that is when she leaves, Emily doesn't see the good of what's happening right now. She doesn't see Lorelai's kindness and sacrificing herself for her daughter and putting that before her own interests and stuff. They're having a good time, and then she has to leave dinner, and so it's such an inconvenience, and it's such like a hard thing to be in that environment again with Christopher and Sherry, where it's like, yeah, this is tough and this is painful. Emily doesn't see that. She just latches on to, you're going to the, you know, the woman that's between you and Christopher, blah, 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 blah. She just focuses on the negative stuff.
She really
does. Which
is
really hard to watch. And you just want to, like, take her aside and be like, Emily, bro, chill.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Just let this one go.
Yeah, let it go, man.
She always uses the phrase when talking about Christopher or Sherry is that they destroyed any chance you had of happiness.
Yeah, which is
bums me rough. Out.
It's a rough way of putting it, yeah. Right?
It's a guilt tripper.
Mm-hmm. It's a Jack tripper.
And it is.
John Ritter, we love you. I also liked in that dinner scene, too, that Emily, when Lorelai was making a bunch of quips, she was like, calm down. We don't have a buffer here tonight.
So yeah.
It was like a very self-aware line where it's like, I love you, but pump the brakes a little bit. I like that Roy suggests videotaping the birth. That's an interesting idea.
There's a lot of technology mentions in these later episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Just about being connected and getting online.
Oh.
Using video, like film the birth, get a DVD player, just stuff like that. Even the suggestion that Emily and Richard have a TV, which we've never seen,
they probably have it in the bedroom.
Yeah.
I know we do see a TV at the Emily Gilmore Manor in season 4. I think the season 4 premiere. Let's talk too about Luke's date. It went pretty good.
Yeah.
They had a good time. They come back. And this shade of Jess, I like and I enjoy because he's basically just like he's like a little Luke. Kind of. He's a little version of Luke where he's a little irritable and he's a little grouchy, but overall he doesn't like hate people. He's not being a piece of garbage to anybody. When Kirk asks him for, what should I do? He's like, go read a book, go read Moby Dick. But not in a way where it's like, I hate you, die.
Right.
like it's like a chilled out version of the Jess that we've seen before, a little mellowed out. And someone I don't hate. Like in the first scene, it was a little much, but in the scenes where he's like, I'll give you an hour, I tried, blah, blah, blah. And he's like giving him, I like any dynamic with Jess and Luke where they're just kind of giving each other shit and giving each other guff. And I think it's fun for them to play too, rather than just like, follow the rules, damn it. No, I'm not going to follow the rules. I'm going to read a book and steal a baseball. Was that a good impression?
It was.
Thank you. I'm not searching for validation, but thank you. I did kind of tear up in that scene, too, in the hospital, where Emily and Richard are chasing after her. Just the idea that one of the best moments, actually, was Lorelai signing herself in, and she puts on her headphones, and it's 99 Red Balloons. She drove herself there. She got a taxi or whatever going into
labor. It's crazy.
It's such a sad idea, man, that, like, when you're living there and you are so disconnected to them to the point where it's like, I'm not even going to tell you I'm in labor.
I just assumed that they weren't home, but...
No, but it was like intentional on her part. Although anytime I think of someone in a hospital waiting room putting on headphones, think of Garden State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were they in a hospital waiting room in that scene, in that movie?
I don't know. I only remember, this song is going to change your life. Gold teeth and the curse for this town.
That Emily has to wait outside outside the delivery room.
Yeah.
She's not allowed in. That's the breaking point, I think. That's like the point of no return to me.
If I were Lorelai, I would not want her anywhere near that room.
Right.
Because she's
stressful.
She's very stressful.
Yep.
As if having a baby isn't stressful enough.
I concur. I also like going back to that scene where Jess is trying to give Luke and Nicole some bone time. I like that line Kirk has where they're fighting outside and he just leans over to Nicole and says,
they have amazing communication.
Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't know.
They talk.
Because they don't. Like, and how would Kirk observe that? And just, yeah, it was just such a weird, funny non sequitur. I really, really enjoyed it.
Kirk is like two steps away from keeping people in his basement or something. Their communication skills are unparalleled. Above any specimen I've ever seen.
My desires are unconventional.
Show me.
That's going to become a mainstay.
Good.
Oh, man.
That sucks.
Shout out to
Zach. Still need to send me all those clips. I need to get those.
Oh, yeah, that's right. For the big Supercut remix version, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, we should do our segment where you feed, I will swallow. Talk about what they ate.
If you're out on the road.
Rocky Road.
Feeling hungry and so full.
Full. Hungry and so full?
Yo.
I like it. It's like a juxtaposition. It's like we're all walking contradictions, right. You know? They have hospital coffee. I think that's the only thing they eat in this one. Wow. Oh, Lorelai has something at Emily's.
Lorelai has a sandwich when she's pregnant.
She has a sandwich. She also has something at Emily's when they're at dinner, but I forget what it was.
They drink alcohol.
They drink alcohol. Roy, does Rory eat in this episode?
Rory never eats.
Oh, no. And that's been where you feed, I will swallow. Any other things we want to talk about? We've covered a lot of this. Well, actually, you know, the one thing we can talk about is kind of what we talked about in episode 308, in the beginning of the Lorelai's life isn't quite what she made it out to be. Because truthfully, like, her parents aren't as horrible as she makes them out to be in discussion. In the flashbacks, which I would assume is like an impartial, it's not like through the eyes of Lorelai, it's not a weird like
right. Cinematic
convention like that. It's like, oh, this is what happened. And Emily and Richard, they're a little snooty, like a little bit, but it's not an unsafe environment. It's not something, I don't know.
Something that really helps us put into perspective their relationship is anytime we see them bouncing off of someone else. Like when we see them with Stroud and Francine, we're like, oh, they're fine. But when we see them against Lorelai, it's always kind of biased to be like, you can see how Lorelai's frustrated. It must not be good.
Right. I think it's interesting too, though, just playing devil's advocate to my own idea, man, is the fact that in flashbacks, we don't see any physical affection between Lorelai and Richard and Emily. You don't see them hug. You don't see verbal affection between them either. No one says, I love you, I care about you, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Well, I mean, the first time we even see Emily is when Lorelai is going for a dress fitting.
Right. Or, yeah, she's fitting with it upstairs, and it won't fit, which is kind of a crazy way to figure out you're pregnant.
It's the stupidest way, I think.
Right. Is that a TV thing? Like, oh, the dress doesn't fit.
She would know she was pregnant before that, part of me missing her,
yeah.
And,
right?
Yes. And
I don't know. We're just two fellas, but...
I know a lot about periods. No. Okay. That's a crazy way to figure out also because she keeps like trying to buckle it after Emily goes and then she gets that look of like, oh no, I guess I'm pregnant. It's like, no, what?
Oh, brother.
It was like 3 months at that point, wasn't it? Or what did she, I feel like something happened that suggested it had been 3 months.
I don't remember a line where Lorelai was like, yeah, me and Christopher had alcohol 3 months ago. I don't remember it. Maybe it did happen.
Oh, wait, no, because they went for the fitting 3 months ago and it fit.
That's what you're thinking of.
Although it could have literally just happened a week ago. But again, if it happened literally a week prior, she wouldn't have any noticeable change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, that seemed like a weird thing. Just have it happen some other way. I understand that that's the most dramatic thing, and you want to like illustrate, oh, they're trying to push her in this kind of life, and this literally kept her from it, and
right.
from fitting into the dress and fitting into the mold that her parents would have for her. We'll do some more Twitter Q&A then. Amanda, who asked previously if I had cried in this episode, the answer is yes. She asked, did you think that young Lorelai looks like Vanessa Hudgens? She did a little bit.
Yeah.
I see it.
Yeah.
I see it. You know, Chelsea Mullet. Is that her name?
Brummett.
Chelsea Brummett. Chelsea Mullet.
Which is funny because I looked up pictures of her just to see what she looks like now. And there's one picture of her that looks exactly like Chelsea Peretti, too.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
It's really funny.
Gotta Google that.
Gotta
Googs, baby. Okay, Rose McGrade asks, if you could become pregnant, what would be your birth plan?
Well, first of all, I'm going to plan to get pregnant is part of the birth plan.
Yeah, that's how you trap them.
Plan everything. Then, as soon as I feel the contractions, 4 minutes apart, I go, uh-oh, baby coming.
Oopsie.
And my husband, American superstar George Clooney, drives me to the hospital in one of our many.
So you're his second wife?
Yeah.
Because he's married. Okay.
Well, third.
Oh, okay. Who's in between?
No, he was married already.
Oh, he was?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah. he and Amal not going through some stuff, maybe because, did you know George Clooney doesn't believe in rainbows?
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wait, he doesn't believe...
He doesn't believe rainbows exist.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah. Tell everyone.
Wow. By the way, his wife was great in that Woody Allen movie. Scenes from them all.
God damn it. Anyway. I was like, just say it. Say it. Okay. God, one of these days I'm going to make a supercut of every time you make a joke and I'm just like, okay, what is it? Come on. George Clooney drives me to the hospital in one of our many town cars. Mm-hmm. He says, don't worry about this, baby. You and me are going to make it after all.
And then he throws his hat in the air.
Yeah, exactly. Mary Tyler Moore style. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the hospital, everyone's like, oh my God, George Clooney. Oh my God, his more famous wife, me.
At this point, you've surpassed Mr. Clooney in fame.
Before we got married. That's how he found out about me. And then I just fucking, I push the baby out like it's nothing, dude. I'm a pro. Not a pro because it's happened before, but a pro just because I can handle anything.
It just slides out of you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Like a slip and slide.
Okay. That sounds like a good plan. Feasible, doable, realistic. Mine would be home birth in the bathtub. And then I never drain the bathtub for as long as my child lives with
That's
me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, because then I can be like, hey, son, or like daughter, or whatever, like, this is where you came from. But I do it to them like every day.
And you can guilt trip them too. It's just like, look, I brought you into this world and I can bring you right back in.
Or I can drown you in the stuff that brought you into it as well.
Don't make me drain the tub.
If no, you know Mom, what no. I mean.
Is that gross?
No.
Yes. No.
So Monia Hanamanapia. Sorry, her name is Monia, but she asked if you could recast younger Lorelai and Christopher, who would you pick? So if the series was happening now, who would you pick to be the young Christopher and Lorelai?
James Marsden as young. Well, he's too old now.
He's too old. Maybe James Marsden like 20 years ago.
Yeah. James Marsden, whenever the show was airing, and I'm trying to think of who
a good Lorelai would be.
Yeah,
Sutton Foster. Just kidding. Shout out to Bunheads.
I can't even think. Part of me is like, just make Alexis Bledel do it.
But she's so different. That's the funny thing. It's like, I totally get casting her as the daughter, but she has such a different cadence, delivery. Yeah, yeah. Presence than Lauren Graham does. It's pretty remarkable.
Maybe if they dyed Saoirse Ronan's hair.
Okay. Yeah. I could see that. I'm going to say Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Because they're great.
Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings. Hey, book. Now, this is interesting. This is a question and kind of a, you know, some thoughts, a little bit of speak on that from Judy Smoodia? Smoomita?
Judy Moody in the Bummer Summer?
Yeah, Judy Moody in the Not Bummer Summer.
Not So Bummer Summer, that's what it was.
The final scene illustrates that Lorelai lived with Emily and Richard for a full year and apparently routinely left Rory's baby stroller around for Emily to trip over. What was she running away from? Emily and Richard clearly wanted to be involved in Lorelai and Rory's life, even after her and Christopher obviously don't fall through with the marriage they had planned for them. Additionally, the conversation between the Gilmores and Hayden show that they wouldn't stand for anyone trying to send away Lorelai or pressure to abort her pregnancy. I just don't understand how Lorelai was so, quote-unquote, suffocated by her parents who clearly loved and supported her to the point where her actions of cutting them out seemed downright cruel.
That's true. They go straight from... Here she is about to have the baby to she's gone, and there should be some stuff in between that to show why she would leave.
Or maybe there shouldn't be, and maybe the ambiguity of that is the choice.
Because the ambiguity of it makes it seem like Lorelai made the wrong decision, like no question. Adding something there would have made us think like maybe she made a smart decision. Like up until that point, I thought maybe like we don't know why Lorelai left, if there was a very good reason.
But I think that all the episodes leading up to this one are that side of the coin.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Because we've just heard it so many times. I had to go away. I had to run away. I didn't want that life, blah, 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 da, da, da. So we're like trained to think that. And then when we actually see the events, that's kind of the other side of that coin. That kind of changes our perspective a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I think it would have been cool to play more beats of that where it is like, because it's cool. It's something we were talking with Sarah Hayward about, where the more people on both sides have valid points, the more interesting it is to see that drama played out. And I think this is a good example of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would have been cool to see some more beats and maybe establish that a little bit better. Let's go ahead and rate the episode. Let's do it. Let's do it all again. I'm going to give this one. I enjoyed it. A lot of people don't like it. A lot of people don't. It's not reviled, but it is not anyone's top 10 list, I would say. I'm going to get so many tweets that are like, it's in my top 10 list. But I think people think the risk of casting the younger actors as Christopher and Lorelai wasn't worth it, blah, blah, blah. But I really enjoyed it. I was kind of gearing up for it to be kind of a bummer episode or not as good.
Right.
But I found way more to like about it in this one than the previous two, especially the last one, the boring fishing episode. So I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 Sony Walkmans, which is what I believe Lorelai listens to in the waiting room.
It's crazy to me that you said this isn't a very popular episode, because my thought coming out of it was I love this episode a lot, even though I think that they made some mistakes structurally in the story. I think they shouldn't have put it against this backdrop of Sherry's pregnancy. I still think there was a scene missing in the flashback to at least show her life with the baby. Like, even if it's just we see her with the baby and like looking around, just being like, I don't want to live here with you. I don't want you to grow up like I did, or something like that.
Right. And it would have been cool to have even a follow-up episode that shows some of that stuff. Like, in between Lorelai giving birth to Rory and then her leaving, what was that life like? But they never do. They never return to this structure. They never have flashbacks again. Unless they do in season 7, and I don't know about it. But
I even, like, I thought, like, this is the episode that would go out for, like, Emmy nominations. I don't know why. I thought this was a very strong episode. I thought it was very good. I thought it was funny when it needed to be. I thought it showed the parallels of present day Lorelai and Emily and past Lorelai and Emily really well. I liked it a lot. I'm giving it 9 out of 10.
Oh, dang.
9 out of 10 pickles on the side.
Pickles on the side. Pickles on the side. Looking like a fool with your pickles on the side. All right. Well, now it's time for a little segment. I'm going to look at this because I forgot what it's called. Thank you. Thankfully, I have this cross stitch. Where you tweet, I will follow, baby. You can find
What's it called?
Here.
Oh, where you tweet, I'll follow. Okay, yeah. I get it.
Isn't that good to have? Because now we know.
Right.
Because I was having to like go on my notes on my phone, but now I can just look right there. It's so beautiful. You can find me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. Everywhere, man. I'm everywhere. I'm in your closet. I'm in the back of your car. I'm down the street. I follow. And you...
Have you seen It Follows?
No.
Ooh.
Is it good?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, so follow me, Instagram, Twitter, all that dumb stuff.
Did I already do the thing where I say you can find me in the club and then say sing 50 Cent?
I think so. But you can
I'm losing my bits.
Losing your bits.
I'm losing my bits. No, I'm not going to do it again. You can find me at Electrolemon on Twitter and Tumblr and Instagram.
Richard, stop it! Stop it!
That's actually the name of my my Periscope account.
Yeah.
Richard, so, stop it! Stop it!
Yeah. Anyway, hey guys, it is a rad Periscope account. Of course, you can follow the show at Gilmore Guys Show on Twitter and the same name on Instagram at Gilmore Guys Show. Facebook.com/Gilmore Guys Show. We're also on SoundCloud. You can email us GilmoreGuysShow@gmail.com for our Gilmail Guys episodes, or aka
Emaily Gilmail.
Emaily Gilmail. So you can do that. Also, and we haven't played one of these in a while because we haven't had a lot of them to play, but you can also call us for, I think we'll do another call-in episode, maybe like a little mini episode, half hour.
Try to do one a season.
Yeah. And it's 772-934-4559, 772-WE-GILLY is the number you can call in for that. Leave a voicemail or call in during our you know, during our call-in shows. Right. You know what to do. But yeah, if you leave a voicemail, make it succinct. Don't just ramble on like an idiot. I'm just kidding. That'd be harsh. But yeah, for the episode specific Q&A, it's helpful if it's, you know, under 5 minutes, no more than five. I would say under 30 seconds is a good length to shoot for.
Yeah.
So we love hearing them and playing them. Thank you so much. And yeah, call us anytime. And that's been it for us. That's been it for episode 313.
What do we do at the end of these?
Oh, we sing a song.
What song? End. Do I know it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Here we go.
Say the sign, cause I go on. Who is this?
This might be William Hung. We gotta get to the chorus at least.
We do, I'm sorry.
It's taking so long.
I like this song, not this version.
If I can see
it. Is there another version of this?
Then I can do it. If I just believe it. There's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar. You see me running through that open door.
I believe I can fly.
I can fly.
Fly.
I can fly. Fly.
It's so long. Okay.
If you're out on the road, feeling lonely and so cold.
Cold.
All you have to do is call my name and I'll be there on the next train.
Choo choo, mother effers. Oh, sorry. Ha!
I will follow.
Aggressive, anywhere, aggressive. Anywhere
that you tell me to.
DMX, what?
You need me to be with you. I will follow. Where you lead. I will follow,
yeah, I should follow
anywhere that you tell me to. If you need me to be with you, I will follow where you lead.
I like that song.